Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking green today. Yes, we're going to be talking about green homes, dwellings for the 21st century. My guest today is Ashley Rooney, and Ashley's got quite an interesting background. She's been involved with environmental perspectives for quite a while. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, when we first started talking about having you as a guest, you said that you were the researcher. You're the one that goes out and you pull together all of this information regarding different aspects of dealing with the environment, making it a better world to live in because of becoming more educated and knowledgeable about what to do and what not to do. You've been involved in all kinds of other publications. Why have you become so strongly interested in the environmental perspective with homes?
With whom? Because for years ago, when I was actually in the business environment, I wrote a lot about energy conservation. And that was way back during the days of the oil crisis. And I realized what a concern it would be as you watch the increasing cost of energy and how hard it was to get gas in those days. Subsequently, you know, I've become a gardener and a walker, and I want to preserve this world for my children. I'd like it to be a place that they can grow up and be happy, and I'm concerned when I see so many of my young neighbors living always within their great big houses with only the air conditioning on and never outside to see the flowers, to hear the birds, to listen to the wind. And it's sort of a shame when you think about it. This is our world.
Yes, it is, and I think your points are very good. And, of course, in today's world, due to various issues, so let's look at the one that everybody is facing today, fossil fuel, gasoline, prices are going through the roof, and I don't know that they're going to reverse anytime soon. So here we are in an environment where more and more people are becoming aware that the natural resources that were thought of being inexhaustible actually are exhaustible, whether you're talking about fish in the ocean or you are talking about cleaner air, fuel. I mean, you can go across the board on so many things.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the components that I was discussing this morning with someone, a woman who lives in California, is that we have such a population today that wasn't there 50 years ago. We've got 7 billion people on this planet. There are a number of places in the world where the resources have been totally thrown away by individuals, especially in third world countries, because they didn't know of any other option. So they depleted their sources, whether it was resources, whether it was the trees, whether it was water, whether it was soil, knowing how to take care of it. I mean, let's face it, we've done it here in the United States. But we're in a very good position, Ashley, because of people like you who are taking the time to say, hello, pay attention, I want you to see the red light here, but also I want you to realize you've got some options. And that's what I like about your book.
Why, thank you.
Because that is what you do. You create options. Now, the home is the American dream, always has been, to be able to have your own home. But there's a lot of things that go on in homes today that people weren't so concerned about 50, 60, 100 years ago. And it has to do with toxins. Tell us some of the things that you discovered in your research regarding the American home.
Well, number one, I didn't realize I live in New England. And I was amazed with the Texan architects as they came through with all the worries about the toxins and the bugs. And when I thought about it, I thought, this is, you know, really opened my mind to how different we are in the United States. You in the state of Washington have a totally different set of problems than we do here in New England.
Yes.
And you have the damp and the wet. We have the freezing cold and the hurricanes, and we worry about that. In the process of trying to find out more and trying to understand what people are talking about when they talk about green homes, I first sort of worked our way through here in my own home of what we could do. I was not going to buy a new home. I was not going to build a new home. But what my husband and I can do, we live in a very old house, 1820.
Oh, my goodness, that is old.
Oh, yeah, it's right on the route that Paul Revere rode on his way to alert John Hancock that the Redcoats were on their way, right here in Lexington, which is where the Revolution began. And perhaps maybe some of the thinking should begin here also about green. But I learned we could do various things in our own home. I knew about installing those CFLs. But like most of us, I was kind of lazy about putting those funny, twisty, curlicue light bulbs in all our lights. And we went around and we did it.
Mm-hmm.
We reprogrammed our thermostat, something we had never done. We turned off the dry cycle in the dishwasher. We installed an attic fan to exhaust heat and used that in lieu of the air conditioning. We use a rain barrel now. We had always done something about the trying to conserve water, but I actually bought a rain barrel. We use the toaster oven more frequently instead of the big oven. They're just the two of us. We changed our lifestyle in many, many ways. And since we did this, my husband points out to me, we've been using less kilowatt hours according to the utility bills.
Mm-hmm.
And that alone can make a big difference. And as people come in and they see those funny light bulbs, or they say, it's a little cold in here, and I offer them a sweater instead of immediately putting up the thermostat, they go home and think about it. And my friends have now installed the CFLs, and they're fascinated by the rain barrel and how that works. And you, just in our own way, we can be good stewards of the earth and help other people think about how they might want to change their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
What else can we do? You get the low VOC paints instead of getting paints that are full with toxins and all the rest of it. We're all concerned. I mean, people my age are sort of saying, why are kids coming down with all these allergies? We didn't grow up with a peanut butter allergy. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
Something has happened in our world, and maybe it's how we're living in it.
Well, I think that's very true. In fact, I am aware of a number of builders that I've had conversations with. One of them, in fact, was talking about the state of Colorado. And this was a surprise to me at how in the homes they have a major problem with mold. And I said, Colorado? You got to be kidding.
Yeah.
He said, no. He said, what it is that they have made them so tight in the way that they're sealed off, the houses don't breathe. So if there's any kind of moisture, the mold just has a field day. Now, this is what I was told. Perhaps I was given wrong information.
No, I've run into that, too.
What has happened is that there have been brand-new homes. We're talking about homes $500,000 and up that have had to have the walls ripped out because within a short period of time, due to the environment of weather, it has taken over the interior walls.
Right.
I've had a friend down in Oregon, and again, you brought up the point, the Pacific Northwest. We have a lot of rain here, and interestingly enough, we don't have as much rain as Virginia has, but we have a dampness here that is something that people have to pay attention to, and it is amazing. I had a friend that bought a home in Oregon. She couldn't sleep in the home. She was sick as a dog. Her husband ripped out a wall. They come to find out that the entire lining, all of the insulation throughout the home was covered with mold.
Wow.
And it was because of faulty installation of certain things and moisture condensing, and it just, you know, it was living the life of Riley, you might say, and her health was suffering. So thousands of dollars later, they didn't want to move. The husband was very resourceful, and he wasn't affected by it. They pulled everything out and cleaned it up, and now she's able to sleep in her own home.
Mm-hmm.
Health is a big issue here, and that is something that John C. McConnell, who has put the foreword in your book, brings up. He said, green means dealing not just with energy, but also with building materials, human health, and with pollution. Now, you brought up a point a moment ago. People saying to you, I don't understand why we have got so many problems with health in many perspectives. Our youngsters are not growing up with the sense of wellness. Well, most kids today aren't outside playing. They aren't building their immunity the way a few generations past were. I mean, heck, kids played in dirt, they climbed trees, and I'm not saying people didn't have allergies then, but it was different. They had a chance to build their immune system.
Right.
They were out in the fresh air. They weren't enclosed, encapsulated classrooms, which I've seen a great deal of. The same with homes. I mean, there are people that are sitting in their homes all day long. They never see the outside, period.
Right. As a matter of fact, I think in my preface I quoted something from the Kaiser Family Foundation about that, the children spending so many hours within the house.
Yes, you said 6.5 hours a day on television, electronic games, computers, music, and other media. And that's between the ages of 8 to 18.
Right. And I notice I'm surrounded by big houses, big old houses now. But we with young families, but the children are never outside. And when I think my children used to play flashlight tag,
mm-hmm.
and run around and look at the lightning bugs and all the rest of it, and I think, oh, this is a shame. But it may be the way of the world is that's what it's going to be. People are going to live inside. They're too busy, you know, trying to get into college and all the rest of it. This is a whole matter of big lifestyle changes, what's
mm-hmm.
happened over the world.
And there's, I think, just a lot of, well, there's often in many areas, depending on where you are. I know down in L.A., you can have smog alerts in different parts of the country where they say it's toxic being outside.
Right.
So we have seen changes overall. When I was born and raised in Los Angeles, we were outside all the time. We didn't have to worry about it. The Valley of the Smoke is what L.A. used to be called by the Indians. And that's because it was always a haze. I mean, it was a big pocket, and it got hazy, and that was before automobiles.
Right,
so
right.
They had it then, but you have these conditions, and I think there's a lot of misinformation, but there's also education we go through. You brought, or I should say, John brought up something in his foreword about the differences in country, in the area of country. How, you know, the Eskimos had igloos and why those were so important when they were out and about and the reasons why they were so effective. In the past, Roman houses with their atriums.
Mm-hmm.
You have, in Iran and Pakistan, the heat there is so just tremendous. So they have places that are built with what are called air scoops.
Right.
You say Chesapeake Bay, because of the weather, the unwanted heat from cooking fires, they had great chimney masses on the exterior of end walls. And that's so cool because when you go out and you look at all of these old houses, you'll see the fireplaces situated exactly like that. New England, they had all the fireplaces in the middle of the house.
Right.
And double-hung windows. This one really grabbed me because I was just at Monticello about a month ago, and there are windows that Thomas Jefferson put in the guest room that I thought were one of the most ingenious designs I've ever seen, because you could raise the lower window, you could raise the upper part of the window to let the heat out, they'd raise it in the morning at the bottom so the cool air would come in, and then they lowered the other unit at the top to let it out, but it also worked as a door. You could open the cotton picking thing up and walk outside.
Yep.
I mean, I love ingenuity like this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they didn't have air conditionings back in the 1700s. They didn't do that. So somebody came up with these marvelous ideas, and I thought, this is great. This is something we need to understand its value. You bring up the architectural role of plants and how significant they are. All of this wonderful information is put in here. And then you've got David Harkey saying you can build one if you want to build one. Or you can do what you've done, take your home and look at how you can make your home more energy efficient. Now, how did you choose these houses? What was it? Because the photography in here is just incredible. Those of you listening, again, it's Green Homes Dwellings for the 21st Century, and Ashley Looney is my guest. How did you determine what homes you were going to put into this book?
Well, I really wanted, as anybody who's working with green, wanted as many small homes as I could find. And I knew that was going to be very difficult. Most of us who are sort of interested in the green movement would say houses should be smaller than they are today. I mean, we see these enormous houses you mentioned, Colorado, that are going up 10,000 square feet, and you think, oh, my goodness, who needs that kind of size? I was really on the lookout for a green, small, under 2,000 square feet. That was one of my first criteria, to find those. But then, moving on from there, I knew I could find the middle size. I also had to have some large green homes because as much as we might believe that these large homes use too much energy, but we also know that some people are going to insist on having large homes. You just can't change people overnight. They're going to want those double high hallways, those enormous bathrooms, and all the rest of it. But hopefully, and the houses that I used in the large section were very green, and they obviously had the money to put in a lot of green, energy-saving, environmentally good products. These products can have bigger upfront costs. And even though people may want large homes, it doesn't mean they aren't using those green features that we all would prefer.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked around. I knew a lot of the architects from some of my earlier architecture books. And then I prowled around, and people told me about so-and-so and the professors. I mean, one of the ones that fascinated me was the professor way up, and I think he's in Wisconsin, and how he barely heats his house. Also, I love the Big Dig house, which is right here in Lexington. The Big Dig, I think, is probably nationally known. It was Boston decided to do this multi-million highway project. And the engineer who was on it, at the end of the project, you know, because they make all those exit ramps and ways for you to get around, was told by the Commonwealth, here's some money, go throw this stuff away, which meant all those 600,000 pounds were going to be dumped into the dump again. What is that doing to the environment? What is that, and what's the energy that's going into doing all that? And he thought about it and said, take your money back, Mr. Commonwealth. I'm going to take the things. And he built a house out of it.
Yes, and
it was amazing.
I've got the photographs in front of me. He used steel beams for the floors and the ceilings.
Yep.
And for people who are in earthquake areas, steel beams are really a good thing to use for your structural composition of your home.
Yeah, he said this house would resist all earthquakes. And he also put it up, which is absolutely amazing, in about 4 or 5 days. I think he told me, $175 a square foot, which here in Lexington, Massachusetts, is considered very inexpensive. I thought the ingenuity of a person like that was amazing. He is now trying to work through the government, the federal government, to try to get everybody to standardize those road ramps and things that you do for highways. So then, when they're all through with it, instead of throwing it away in the poor local town's dump, that maybe a school could use it for addition, something like that. And that kind of remodeling and recycling is fascinating. I remember when I tried to do, we redid a kitchen, and I couldn't find anybody or any place that would take my old stove. But now there are outfits out there that will take, and Habitat for Humanity will connect you to a local bricks and mortar restore where you can donate leftover building materials. And many cities have websites which will refer you to organizations. That alone, if you could just recycle some of the materials that we, as Americans, we go through so quickly.
Well, I'll give you an example. There's a gentleman I know who is a wood craftsman who's back in Virginia, and he was called by a friend of his, and he's been a craftsman for many, many years, and his friend's father had died. I don't remember what part of the country the family had lived in, but he found that his dad had all of this old wood that was out in their barn, and it was a white oak, I believe. And it's next to impossible. This particular species of tree is next to impossible to find, and it had been sitting there for years. He doesn't know how long. And he said, with my dad gone, because he knew our friend, he said, would you like to have it? He just wanted to give it to him. He said, no, I'll buy it from you.
Yeah.
And he makes, you know, fine furniture and things like this. And he said, you don't see wood like this. These old forests are gone.
Right.
So he is recycling this and putting it in and making beautiful furniture with it. And my goodness, it's just selling so fast. But your point is that there are ways of putting things to use. The Habitat for Humanity, the Fuller Foundation, there are a number of different groups that are going around and they're refurbishing or taking homes that people have that maybe they just are on a low income and they can't do anything with it. So when you are able to donate like that, then what you can do is just know that you may not have some use for it, but someone else will.
That's right. And maybe also on the other side, I mean, if you you obviously have read the book very well, there is a condominium down at the very end where that man used old motorcycle parts, as I remember.
Oh, and that is funny. You've got them in here where they're using car windows.
Right.
I mean, anybody that has the resourcefulness and the imagination to be able to implement it, it just is amazing to me. You'd have a blast at a junkyard.
Yeah, that's right. And I thought, oh, now this guy is very clever. It may not be the house that my mother would want, but for the right age group, it would be a perfect, fun house to live in. And you think, oh, yeah, that's cool. That guy, again, is really thinking and is trying to be, you know, that innovation and trying to get ourselves out of the box and say, well, I have to put in the oil furnace. I have to do this. I have to do that. And think past those and say, is there a way we could do some of this other stuff? Just the passive solar alone. I visited a friend recently, and her bathroom, I keep wanting to turn off the light because it's so bright in her bathroom because she has a skylight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, oh, that's great. When I think of, you know, our winters can be long and dark. And, you know, if you get enough light through a skylight, you would need to turn on the lights all the time, which can be really amazing and stuff.
That's true. And you bring out information regarding solar. You brought out something regarding instant hot water. This was a piece of equipment that the Europeans have been using for a long time, and I think it's just now beginning to catch on in the United States. And you actually can replace your hot water heater, and you can have hot water on demand.
Right.
And this is something that can be put in at a main site. It doesn't have to be put underneath every sink. I've seen some of these units that you put in underneath every sink, but I've had feedback on it saying, well, it's not all that good. It's just not going to give you really as much as you want or think, and if someone's using something in the kitchen, then you won't get it in the bathroom and so on and so forth.
Right.
So you have to do your homework on this. But solar, there's different types of solar paneling. There are people that are using green roofs.
Yep.
And you bring that out in your book, different materials, construction. So it really behooves someone, if they have an older home like you have, and if they're going to be doing some remodeling, to come from a positioning of who can I talk to that can give me some good feedback. You just don't want some hotshot saying, well, go and spend $500,000 and we can fix your home up. Excuse me, I have maybe $20,000. Or maybe $30,000 in my home equity. If I'm going to be upgrading my home, what do I need to do? And there are various things that people can do. And you bring a lot of that out in your book. And
right.
I think that's so well done. The same with the street signs. Over 3 tons of old street signs used for siding and other elements on 2 buildings. I thought,
right.
Street signs?
Yeah.
You got to be kidding. But no, why not? It's
right.
Metal.
Right. And, you know, and you can see it could be really, really quite cool. Yeah, I think when you get into the remodeling, and we had some of those houses in the book, and I tried to include those also, but I really wanted the architects to try to show us the newest things that are out there because they're different for different areas of the country, what you're doing. But the remodeling is a good time to look at what you might want to add because you can say, well, I'm going to live in this house another 10 years. So then it's appropriate to add some energy-saving features, such as the LED lighting or maybe active solar for your pool or spa. If you're in a sunlit area, I don't necessarily suggest it for New England, but I ran into somebody here who does have active solar for hot water.
Mm-hmm.
She said it was really hard after the third shower, though. Massachusetts is not known for great sun, but the landscaping certainly makes a difference.
In the east, you might want to put in new windows to get more solar in, while out west, you might want to add roof overhangs to keep the sun out. We have very different problems.
Yes, we do. And those are points that you bring out in your book that I think makes your book very valuable, because you do have different needs. When you're living in Arizona, you have extremes of cold and extremes of heat.
Right.
How are you going to design your house? One of my favorites that you had in here was the house built around an 11-foot boulder.
Oh, I love that one.
That one, I thought, who in a million years would have built a house around an 11-foot boulder? I've seen houses designed around fireplaces from the 1600s,
yeah.
But not a boulder.
Yeah.
It must have been really interesting for you to do the research on that one.
Well, now, remember, I don't do all the research. The architects are very helpful. I ask questions. And they also do submit their write-ups, too, and all that. I'm trying to understand it so I can then interpret from an architect's words to layman's language so we all can understand it is where it gets a little complicated at times. And there was, in this case, in this book, I had to do a lot of research just because I didn't understand all the terms.
Mm-hmm.
What does embodied energy mean? I had never heard that term before.
What does it mean?
It means the energy that goes into building something. So my house took so much energy, let's say five people's energy, to build my house way back in 1830. If we knock it down, you're losing all the energy that originally went there. And so it would be smart if you think about how you could reuse that energy to make it useful. So instead of knocking it down, maybe you rehab the house, restore it, put in the green features, and save the energy that was already there.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you embody energy, and then also if you knock it down, then you have to drag it someplace. It has to go into the dump someplace. All that energy gets used up. I liked the guy with the boulder. I thought that was marvelous. And, of course, then he had straw, and he had a cooling tower, which I was not as aware of.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Western thing more than, again, here. But it did make me put in the attic and a fan in my attic.
Well, I know my grandmother, whose home was in Virginia, in Roanoke, Virginia. She put in a fan that, and she had a two-story home. She had about 3,000 square feet in her home in Roanoke. My granddad had built the house. But the upper floor got so hot, she had a special fan that would run during the summer so that the hot air would be sucked out.
Mm.
And it worked very effectively. She never, ever had air conditioning in her place, and Roanoke can be one of the hottest, most humid places you could ever want to be in.
Right.
During certain times of the year. And she didn't have the distortion with furniture, anything else. And it enabled, when she'd open the windows downstairs, and that big fan at the top would do it. And I'm in favor of ceiling fans. I think that they are absolutely awesome. They are just wonderful,
right. They are good.
And they can be very efficient energy-wise.
That's right. They can be wonderful. And then you don't need, I mean, if you look at your energy bills, we've noticed that we spend more in the summer to run the two window ACs than we do in the winter to heat the house. And so we can do more about heating the house, like putting on the extra sweater or shutting off certain rooms. But we need to work more on that AC element. And as I listen to all these centrally air-conditioned houses around me, I think, wow. And this is Massachusetts. This is not Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
where it gets really hot.
Right, and very, very humid.
Yeah,
really.
I like some of the houses where the Whalens down in Florida, where they really looked at the site and tried to understand the site and the breezes.
Yes.
That was new to me, understanding the breezes of the site so you could get the breeze at the right time during the day. And I remember visiting, my family, part of it lives in Mississippi, and there was a big house down there where it had those summer porches and the big hallway down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So you could get the breezes coming in.
Right, and they left the doors open for that very reason.
That's right.
So that the house would literally be cooled. Well, as you can tell, we could talk for hours about this. Green homes, dwellings for the 21st century. Ashley Rooney has been my guest. You can go to Schiffer Publishing, and that's S-C-H-I-F-F-E-R Publishing.com to find out more about the book. It's in all of the major
bookstores and Amazon.com. Ashley, thanks ever so much for being my guest today. I think you've done a phenomenal job with this book, and the material and information in it is worth its weight in green.
Oh. Bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break again. Green Homes, Dwellings for the 21st Century. Check it out. It's really good information. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, we'll have some other good things to share with you. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on BBSRadio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are open. If you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, give me a buzz at these toll-free numbers of 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, if you're a first-time listener, just know all I need from you when you call in is your first name or your initial, and then let me give you my insights, and after that, you're welcome to ask a question about anything that you're interested in. Now, by the way, we've got a wonderful lineup of guests. I'll be giving you that information later on. And right now, what I wanted to share with you, since we've been talking about green homes, are ways of cooling down. Here in the Pacific Northwest, it's rare for us to get, unless you're in eastern Washington, it's rare for us to get really, really intense temperatures. It's almost a joke around here. When the sun comes out and it gets up to about 75, people are complaining about the heat. And then when it starts to rain a little bit, they complain about the rain. So we always say, well, you've got something to complain about one way or the other. But really, we have a very temperate environment here in general. And one of the things that you can do if you're living in the Pacific Northwest and you don't want to invest in air conditioning because, for example, right now we have a fabulous breeze blowing. It's about 77 degrees. It's just absolutely gorgeous outside. You really don't need an air conditioner. All you need to do is open up your windows. But sometimes when the temps are very, very warm, and if you live in a part of the country where you feel oppressed with the heat, like in Arizona, it can be extremely dry. California can be the same way. You can have high levels of humidity back in the south and on the east coast. I know because I've lived in different environments. Well, this is a trick that you can do. I'm going to give you some tips on how you can cool down your environment and at the same time not have to spend a whole bunch of energy. One of the things you can do is use ice cubes. Now, this is really an old-fashioned method, but you can put a bowl of ice cubes in front of your fan, if you're running a fan, and the melting ice will cool the breeze and turns an ordinary fan into, you might say, like an air conditioner. It allows the air to circulate, presents that coolness. Now, there are some places that sell a product that has a cool gel in the center of what is a large amount of netting. And it is elasticized so that you can fit it over a fan. And what you do is you put it in the freezer, and then it works the same way as this does. It enables this cool air to come out. It's very, very refreshing. And again, as I mentioned during the interview that I did regarding green homes for the 21st century, the ceiling fans are absolutely wonderful. I had been in Arizona when it was 115 degrees outside. I mean, you could have cooked your breakfast on the sidewalk and it would have been sizzling within just a minute. It was amazing the difference that those ceiling fans made, and it really keeps the air circulating, which to me is very important. Also, here's a trick. If you get very warm very quickly, you can take a clean sock and fill it with raw rice, seal it with a rubber band, and put it in your freezer for about 2 hours. And then, if you're really, really warm, for example, at night when the houses get so warm, if you're finding you're having a difficult time sleeping, you can use this rice sock, if you will, and just put it under the covers to cool your sheets and maybe around your neck and your head so that you can be cooler. Also, and this is known by all of you, when it's really going to be hot, I was taught this when I was a kid, and I was born and raised in the Los Angeles area, and it can get pretty hot down there. So what we were told is you put everything, you open up your windows, you leave them open during the night, early morning, and then you close them up before the heat of the day starts coming in, and you pull your drapes, and your house will stay cooler. It will reduce your heat that is held in the house by up to 45%. It's absolutely amazing. Also, if you position a fan so it is blowing air out of a room, it helps to move the hot air out of the room. That is something that's been proven time and time again. Also, if you have a fireplace in your home, which we have one in ours, you must make sure your damper is closed, because just like during the winter, you can have the cold winds and cold air coming down through a damper. Well, it's the same thing with heat. Outside heat actually looks for places that it can go to because it's just sucked right down. So remember, you want to be sure that you keep that damper closed. And then again, if you use compact fluorescents, it's a lot cooler than standard light bulbs. So those are just some little tips regarding warm weather. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat with me today. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. And again, all I need is your first name or initial, and I'll give you insights into what might be going on in your life and answer a question for you too if you'd like. Gloria Summers wrote a poem about summertime. It says, each time you hear, each sound you hear, is Mother Nature's way of telling you it's time to dance in the sun and celebrate summer again. One of the greatest activities I think you can do is strolling. I really believe in it. Go outside and walk around. I did that today, and I had the pleasure of seeing I don't know how many butterflies and also dragonflies and hawks. And there's so much that goes on around us that if you just take that moment to reflect and to be quiet and just to enjoy, it can really lift your whole day. It just can make all the difference in the world. So I encourage you to consider that. It really will make a great deal of difference in your mindset and your efficiency. You know, when you stay cooped up all the time, and when you're around computers all the time, I don't know about any of you, and thank goodness for computers, because that's how we are hearing the show. But if you are constantly around this electronic equipment, sometimes it can really make you feel a bit depressed. And I know I'm only able to stand that kind of confinement for a certain amount of time. I know of people who can just sit in front of a computer, my goodness, for almost 24 hours. It doesn't bother them at all. But it's important to get up, to move, to refresh yourself. And this time of the year, it's great. Go on outside, get out there, put your hands in the dirt, do some gardening. Just, if nothing else, like I said, go strolling. It will just pull up your energy. You'll be refreshed. And it clears mental cobwebs out, too. If you're dealing with a problem or an issue, really helps you to get some clarity. Just to take a break, shift what you do, it empowers you as an individual. Now, I mentioned that I was seeing butterflies today. I have a friend who is a botanist and is so much into so many different areas of science, and we had a chance to visit a few weeks back, and he said, Donna, are you aware that a good 50% of the butterfly population, even the moths, have disappeared? I said, no, I'm not aware of that at all. He said, yes, many species have disappeared because of building pesticides, various things that have been brought into the environment. And he said they're a very important part of the environment, of the ecological balance in the world. And I said, well, that's interesting. When and what can we do? He said, well, what you can do is if you have a garden, put things in the garden that are going to attract butterflies. And I came across some information about what you can put in your garden if you have one. And if you live in an apartment and you just have a balcony, you can do the same thing. Butterflies go everywhere. You can have a butterfly garden as small as a window box, or you can use your whole backyard to be an attraction for these beautiful, beautiful creatures. And it's just amazing the difference that it'll make. These butterflies are just absolutely gorgeous. And there's all kinds of species. Now, you want to pick a sunny spot. Butterflies need sunlight to fly, so if you place a flat rock where the morning sun hits first, you'll see them taking sun baths that warm up their wings. And then you want to surround that rock with short plants that won't create shade. And there's a plant called moss roses that can do that for you. Butterflies absolutely love the color of yellow, and purple also is something that they really, really like as well. Now, why? I don't know, but there is something about the colors that's really significant. Also, they really seem to like single bloom flowers. These are the flowers where their center is visible. Why? The butterflies find it easier to get to the nectar. Also, there are some plants that are especially attractive to them. Butterfly bush, impatiens, petunias, they love these plants. They absolutely love them. And if you have a small area of water, just like a little mud puddle, a shallow basin, actually a large plant saucer can work very nicely. In a lightly shaded spot, and you add an inch of sand or soil, just keep it moist, and butterflies will be attracted to that. It's like a magnet, especially when the weather is very, very warm. They like those shallow kinds of areas. Maybe you'd like to put in something where there is a waterfall or a pond, something like this. Just keep in mind some of these things, and you'll attract all kinds of critters. And if you want more butterflies, maybe you want to start working on your garden this year, then what you want to do is also put out plants that they need so they can lay their eggs and ensure the next generation. Now, what I found fascinating about this is that the parsley plant really is very, very conducive to this particular thing, and there's all kinds of different types of parsley. So if you plant parsley, dill, or fennel near your flower garden, that is going to be a place where they can lay their eggs. Also, you can use the growth of these wonderful, wonderful herbs to be able to season some of the things that you like to cook in your own home. So these are just a few tips. And it's just fun. It's absolutely wonderful when you can realize that you're contributing in some way, whether it's through your home or through your garden, to making this world a more beautiful place and a healthier place. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things coming.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians 888-815-9756. I want to mention to you that we have a wonderful event coming up in the state of Washington. That is the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. This is my sixth year of being involved with them. It's their 11th. And it is an absolutely exciting event, and it's going to be held at a brand new location. They have acquired a wonderful 206 acres, and they are going to make this not only the best event of its type in the state of Washington, but it's situated in Belfair, and it is absolutely gorgeous. So if you enjoy family activities that will enable you to step back in time, you can get into costumes, your children will just have a blast with the games and the jousting and all of the wonderful activities that go on there, then go to the WashingtonRenFair.com site. That's Washington, RENSAIRE, and you'll have all kinds of information. The jousting, dancing, music, magic, juggling, history, Shakespearean presentations of different types. Just so much goes on. This is a fantasy fair, and people are all in costume. And, of course, I'm going to be there. There will be a booth. Look for mine, the display of the bright yellow background with the gigantic red lions. I will be there, and we will be there to entertain you. There will be all kinds of books that will be available, but you're going to be able to step back into a time of history that is absolutely fabulous. So if you'd like information on this wonderful event, it's the first three weekends in August. The first three weekends in August, and the hours are 10 until 6. And this year, they are honoring Matt Zampira-Zopi, who passed away last year after last Ren Fair. And this is something that is just going to be a marvelous, marvelous event. So this fair is dedicated to him, but also to those that just love to have a great time. So the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, the first three weekends in August, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Go to their website. This is at Bear Creek, the Wattle Road in Belfair, Washington, WashingtonRenFair.com. They also have a toll-free number of 888-233-3895 if you would like to go. Well, I wasn't able to share with you the story about England's most haunted house, so I thought I would share that with you today. And again, if you want to give me a buzz, 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756. Worley Rectory is one of the most haunted places on record. And there's all kinds of interesting experiences that people have had there. It's located, it's a Victorian building. I've got a picture of in front of me. And there's just all kinds of interesting characters that are there. For more than 100 years, there have been sightings of phantom coaches. There's a nun that shows up, and also a headless man. Objects are thrown around. There's footsteps that people can't figure out why they are being heard as they are. There's writing on walls. And there's also monastic chantings and organ music that goes on in this house. Now, this rectory was built in 1863 for a Reverend Bull, and it was on the site of a medieval monastery. Now, the Reverend and his wife, they had 14 children, and so when they moved into this new building, they started experiencing some very, very strange things. They'd hear the footsteps, they heard taps, bells would ring when they weren't supposed to ring. Now, remember, this is in the 1800s, and they heard whispering voices. One of the girls, one of the daughters, was awakened by being slapped in the face. Someone else saw a figure of a tall man wearing very, very dark clothes. And then, interestingly, there was a nun that was seen quite frequently. Now, nobody went through any kind of harm or experienced any kind of negative in the true sense. However, it was a little unsettling, as I think it would be even for any of us today to go through something like that. Now, when Harry Bull, the Reverend Harry Bull, decided to leave the house, he moved away, his son stayed. And he stayed in this house until 1927. Now, his experiences were that he saw a headless man, he'd see him in the bushes, he saw a phantom coach, and the cook that prepared the meals for the household said that the locked door that they were very, very sure to lock every single night when they come in the morning, the door was unlocked. And four of Harry Bull's sisters saw this young nun more than once. And she just disappeared. And then in 1929, they started having problems with poltergeists. And they also had items appear in the house that were not expected. Pebbles, keys, metals. There were just all kinds of things that would go on. Well, it didn't stop there. In the 30s, there was another minister that moved in. They found that messages were written on the walls for them. And there were strange smells of lavender. There were all kinds of events that happened over and over again. Some of them may or may not have been experienced by the previous owners, but documented records were available for anybody interested in that. And there's also some information that was found out about this ancient, not so ancient, but the ancient site of the monastery, as well as the house itself. They found that there was a nun, a young French woman, who was introduced into this monastery, and when she was forced to leave it, she was to marry someone, she ended up being killed in a building standing on the current rectory site. She was killed by her fiancé. A little mystery. So there's all kinds of fascinating things that can go on in a house, in an old place. And England's most haunted, the Borley Rectory, has a substantial record that I think perhaps still holds true today. This is Donna Sebo. And tomorrow we're going to be talking about children's books, and we'll be sharing some other good things with you as well. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, enjoy yourself. And don't forget to think green, to make this place a better world by being alert and aware of what you can do to improve right where you are, your style of living, and working with different things. It's a whole new world that is evolving for all of us. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.